I'm Diane Roberts, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
While helping the refugees in Sudan, the UNHCR also is caring for nearly 100,000 Eritrean refugees living in four camps in Tigray.
That's VOA's Lisa Schlein in Geneva on concerns about refugees caught in the conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Details coming up also. Police in Uganda have arrested opposition presidential candidate Bobby Wine. And in Cameroon, authorities have deployed troops to the capital to find armed men they say are trying to destabilize the government. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. In Ethiopia, federal government forces loyal to Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed say they are making advances in the semi-autonomous northern Tigray region, which is currently controlled by the Tigray's People's Liberation Front, TPLF. The Ethiopian federal government says this is a limited military action against some members of the TPLF, while the TPLF says this is a war against Tigray. Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shadawi about the different scenarios for the Ethiopian conflict.
The flow of the 20,000 refugees, which some UNHCR officials are estimating could reach 200,000, will put additional strains on Sudan. You know, these are marginalized areas that are not easy to reach. And so trying to cope with this additional influx, you know, will be a big strain on their economy and on those communities that are affected. I think the broader concern is that Sudan may be brought into this conflict in one way or another. Currently, Sudan has maintained a stance of neutrality, though it is receiving refugees. But, you know, clearly the instability is not welcome by Sudan. It has just recently negotiated its own peace agreement with armed opposition groups in Western Sudan. And it's moving forward in a transition towards a democratic civilian-led government. And so instability on the eastern border, you know, with the prospect that other armed groups may be supported by some of the competing actors in Tigray and in Ethiopia is an unwelcome development for Sudan, which has its own issues to be focused on right now.
What are the possible scenarios for the continued conflict in Ethiopia?
I see this unfolding in a number of different ways. And of course, you know, the information we're getting from Tigray is limited. Communications have been cut off. And so we're very much dealing with a partial picture. That said, we are getting indications that the fighting has been intense. And I see this as possibly going in a number of different ways. One scenario is that we'll see a stalemate. You know, these are both well-armed, well-trained forces, and you know, it's difficult terrain, and it's possible that, you know, they'll dig in and there'll be few advances, and it will just be a protracted stalemate, you know, with lots of loss of life and displacement and diverted resources. I think a second scenario is that Tigray becomes isolated because it is landlocked. And if its supply lines are cut and it is unable to reinforce itself, then ultimately through attrition, it may lose capability and will have to negotiate a surrender with the rest of the leaders of the Tigrayan Regional Council. I think a third scenario would be that the conflict would be prolonged and costly on all sides. And this would put strains within Ethiopia and its already fragile regional structure. And some of the other ethnic federal jurisdictions may determine that it's not important enough for them to continue to support it, and rather they'll focus on their own regional interest rather than sort of the national unitary goals that Abiy is pursuing. And as a result, we could see a fracturing of Ethiopian federated structure if this goes on for an extended period.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking to VOA Senior Analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. The United Nations Refugee Agency reports more than 27,000 refugees so far have fled fighting in Ethiopia's Tigray region and headed to eastern Sudan, the biggest influx seen in this part of the country for two decades. At the same time, aid agencies are struggling to reach thousands of refugees living in Tigray. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
An average of 4,000 women, children, and men are crossing the Ethiopian border into eastern Sudan every day. The UN Refugee Agency reports those fleeing the fighting continue to arrive exhausted from the long trek to safety, frightened by their experience. Conditions in Tigray have deteriorated since the Ethiopian government launched a military offensive 2 weeks ago. The government says this was in response to an alleged attack by the Tigray People's Liberation Front on a government defense post. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balash says a full-scale humanitarian crisis is unfolding in the region. One established fact, he says, is that every war creates refugees.
We have seen that repeatedly, that civilians are affected as soon as conflict starts. So people are really worried. They're fleeing the stories of family separations, people not coming with anything. So that's why we are ramping up our assistance to help them.
While helping the refugees in Sudan, the UNHCR also is caring for nearly 100,000 Eritrean refugees living in four camps in Tigray. Balar says the UNHCR is particularly worried for the safety of some 6,500 Eritrean refugees in a camp close to the combat zone. He says there is fear that Eritrean refugees could flee from there and become displaced again within Ethiopia. He tells VOA of his concern about civilians inside Ethiopia, many of whom may have fled their homes and are internally displaced.
Access and insecurity continuing clashes makes it very, very difficult to come with the exact number of people displaced. Colleagues do raise their fears that their is displacement. We don't know what the scale is.
What is known, says Balash, is that people are on the run, both inside and outside the country. Balash says the huge number of refugees arriving in Sudan is rapidly overwhelming the capacity of humanitarian agencies to respond. He says the UNHCR and its partners are doing their best to provide food, clean water, health care, and other essential relief items. He says it is critical to identify new sites so refugees can be relocated away from the border where they will be safer and able to receive assistance and services. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ugandan police have arrested opposition leader and musician Robert Chagulani, known as Bobby Wine, as he was campaigning for January's presidential election. The arrest came just an hour after police warned candidates against violating COVID-19 guidelines. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Ugandan police Wednesday engaged in running battles with supporters of the National Unity Platform Party and its leader Robert Chagulanyi, popularly known as singer Bobby Wine. The chaos in different parts of the capital, Kampala, erupted as protesters chanted Wine's name, setting up fires and police responding with tear gas and live bullets to disperse the crowds. One woman reportedly died after being shot in the head. A radio station in eastern Uganda, Busoga 1, was taken off the air for broadcasting Wine's arrest in the district of Luuka. David Rubongoya, the National Unity Platform Party Secretary General, spoke to VOA about Wine's arrest.
He was entering Luuka district for the first campaign of the day, and he was violently arrested and pepper sprayed and brutalized. He's being driven to an unknown destination in a military truck.
Police say processions and gatherings are not allowed under guidelines posted by the Ministry of Health and Electoral Commission to curb the spread of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Edward Ochom, the Assistant Inspector General of Police, also noted that authorities have repeatedly cautioned political groups against acts of civil disobedience, such as holding unauthorized campaign events, burning of tires, deflating tires of police vehicles, and provocative behavior toward law enforcement personnel. He said they continue to witness acts of defiance, adding that those who defy the guidelines issued by the Electoral Commission will suffer consequences.
We have therefore adopted a tougher approach to preserve the integrity of the electoral process. We have dispatched our specialist teams and quick reaction teams to identify ringleaders and principals for the apprehension in the face of crime. We have disseminated our comprehensive policing plan to all territorial commanders for them to implement without fear or favor.
Witnesses say a local journalist was beaten and pepper sprayed during Wine's arrest. Abbekal Bowa, a photographer with the Daily Monitor newspaper, spoke to VOA about the incident.
Police turned violent and started beating up journalists. The journalist who was on front of the vehicle was sprayed with pepper spray, and then they wanted to arrest him. So as journalists protested, she's arrested, they were beaten and roughed up.
The journalist was rushed to a hospital for medical attention. There has been no comment from authorities. Wine was first arrested in 2018 and briefly detained last month when he registered as a presidential candidate. He is currently being held in Nalufenya Prison in Jinja, a detention center previously notorious for torture of suspects. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
As COVID-19 wreaks havoc in new spikes in cases around the world, Zimbabwe is among the countries that are considering tight new lockdowns to bring the pandemic under control. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has more from Harare.
Dr. Agnes Mahomva is chief coordinator for the national response to the COVID-19 pandemic. She says they have been reviewing how the country has handled the coronavirus.
We did have recently an interaction review where we're looking at what is working, what is not working. We know what works, backed by science, with those preventative measures, but unfortunately, as we're speaking, people seem to be relaxed, are not keen to wear masks properly, all the things we've continued to talk about.
She says many people have thrown caution out of the window, even as Zimbabwe, already hit by economic wars, droughts, growing hunger, and other problems, sees the number of COVID-19 cases rising again. Mahomva says the numbers are not alarming yet.
We have seen that spike.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a trend yet. It might continue. But as we have always said, we're preparing for the worst. We're preparing as if we will have a second wave. That means we have reviewed all our response strategies.
Dr. Nomen Matara is with the Zimbabwe Doctors for Human Rights. He says while the current numbers do not warrant a lockdown, he hopes any new restrictions should be crafted better.
The increase in cases, we think they do not warrant a total lockdown. But in the event that a total lockdown is done, there are some things that we need to improve on from the last total lockdown. First of all, we need to avoid police and other security forces beating people for breaching lockdown rules. If somebody breaks lockdown rules, they should be arrested and due process followed.
He says people should be taken to court instead of being assaulted, as was the case in the first lockdown. He adds that people ought to be more cautious and practice all recommended measures, such as sanitizing, social distancing, and wearing of masks. Critics say the government will not voluntarily get into another lockdown amid efforts to revive the long-battered economy and catch up with the disrupted education calendar. There also have been allegations that the government used the last lockdown to crack down on government critics and keep them from organizing protests. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinabashe from Harare.
Malawi police today arrested pastor and businessman Shepherd Bushiri, who apparently violated his bail conditions and fled to his home country from South Africa. He and his wife Mary had been charged in South Africa with money laundering, theft and fraud, but they reportedly crossed the border to Malawi last week. Bushiri, who describes himself as a prophet, claims to be able to cure HIV and blindness and promises to deliver his followers from poverty. He is known for his luxurious lifestyle. After he skipped bail, a South African court issued warrants for Bushiri's arrest. His escape had prompted a diplomatic dispute between the two governments. Malawi police said his arrest was in response to an Interpol warrant issued Monday. Ghana's capital, Accra, is plagued by frequent floods despite a raft of promises from politicians to fix the problem. Some Ghanaians say the issue will be a key factor in how they will vote in December's general election, as Stacey Knott reports from Accra.
When it rains hard in Accra, some residents fear for their lives and livelihoods due to flooding. The problem is blamed on the city's poor layout, small and clogged drains, and residents building on or near water channels, leaving the water no place to go. Mother Christiana Doski says she has little choice but to stay put and try to fix the damage every time it occurs. She says it really rains and it's heavy when it does. She says the rain disturbs the family as the water comes into the rooms so they clean up after the rain stops. The residents say politicians promise fixes and assistance, but the problem continues with flooding occurring multiple times a year. Some say their vote this December will depend on action or inaction. Others say they have lost faith anything will be done. Mohamed Musa says he will not vote this year because nothing changes regardless.
I don't see a reason why I should vote for, you know, to elect someone to come to power and still the same. The system, the situation still the same, no.
Every time it rains, Accra's waste, including plastic, is carried through the open drains and then back onto beaches. Non-profit group Plastic Punch is pushing for the flooding problem to be a key political focus and for politicians to turn promises into real action. Group co-founder Richmond Kennedy Kwako says action must be taken.
We cannot solve the issues of flooding in Accra with lip service. Lives are lost every time it rains. Property are lost. We find some of the property on the beach. We find TV and a lot of e-waste on the beach.
George Ayesi, the spokesperson for the National Disaster Management Organisation, says the government has worked to overcome Accra's flooding. He says officials are working toward new legislation for his agency to oversee where buildings are constructed. He says a new World Bank project aims to improve flood risk and waste management.
I'm very positive that things are going to improve. But to get to that stage, a lot of investment must be made. A lot of investment must be made, especially in Accra.
For now, those affected by the flooding have to brace themselves for the next round and hope leaders will have the willpower to bring forth a lasting solution. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
Cameroon authorities have deployed troops in the capital, Yaoundé, to find armed men they say are trying to destabilize the government. Several bombs have exploded in Yaoundé over the past 2 months, injuring at least 22 people. Some officials are implying that opposition parties are behind the attacks. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's 10 regional governors at a meeting Monday in the capital agreed that increasing incidents of bombings in the city must be addressed. Nasiri Paul Biya is governor of Cameroon's central region, which includes Yaoundé. He says for the past year, hardly a week goes by without arrest for illegal possession of weapons or planting bombs in public places. He says security forces he has deployed will carry out systematic inspections to areas hosting criminal suspects. Bia says people and vehicles will be systematically controlled at all entry and exit points to Yaoundé. He says they have also prohibited people from taking large bags and packages to popular spots and public buildings. Bia did not say how many more troops were deployed in Yaoundé, but residents have noted increased police checkpoints. Cameroon has an ongoing separatist conflict in the west and Boko Haram militants active on the northern border. However, the governors did not blame any specific group for the security threats. In contrast, the Speaker of Cameroon's lower house of parliament, Kavai Yege Jibril, on Monday linked bombings in the capital to the political opposition. He told lawmakers they needed to guard against plans to destabilize the country. Jibril says anyone who wants to be president should wait for the next presidential election in 2025 instead of starting violence. The opposition denies any role in the bombings and has asked the government to investigate. However, the head of Cameroon's Socialist Democratic Party, Prince Ekosso, said those tired of President Paul Biya in power since 1982 might be taking up arms.
This regime for 38 years now has concentrated itself in destroying opposition voices in this country. When opposition parties are rising up, the regime concentrates in stifling the ideas of opposition, creating situations that keep on vexing the Cameroonian people.
Cameroon's government has yet to accuse any suspected groups of being behind those arrested with weapons or bomb-making materials. University of Chang political analyst Leonard Ekanyi-Kulu says officials are careful not to blame the opposition MRC or Anglophone separatists who call themselves Ambazonians.
Just imagine a situation whereby this allegation is made against, let's say, the MRC party. Now, what will be the repercussion? Just imagine this claim is made against the Ambazonian fighters. It will be that the Ambazonians are succeeding to penetrate Yaoundé and can give a kind of stigma between Francophones and Anglophones.
Security analyst and former military spokesman Didier Bajek says regardless of who is responsible, the government should negotiate a peaceful end to the security challenges. He spoke on state media Cameroon Radio Television, CRTV. Bajek says it is imperative for the government to investigate the political and or ideological issues that are making people to resort to weapons as solutions to their problems. He says a political solution to the security challenge is better than a military solution, which may only create more chaos. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The World Health Organization and the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo have officially declared the DRC's 11th Ebola outbreak over. They say getting the disease under control was particularly difficult in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. The outbreak of the deadly virus in northeastern Equator province killed 55 people and infected about 130 since June. The country and its international aid partners used an aggressive vaccination campaign to contain the virus. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Okwili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday.